Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
You are listening to This Week in Geek, and I'm, of course, Mike, the Birdman Dodd, as you join me on this trek through stupidity that is the podcasting world. But I'm not alone as I travel this land, this sea, this weirdness that is planet Earth. I'm joined with...
Alex.
That's right. I had to really just pump up that intro. No particular reason why. I just really felt like jazzing it up today. Oh my God, it's Monday. Holy crap. What a... It feels like the week was a million years long last week because a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah.
Like my God, our news segment today is going to be long. So strap in, folks.
And just like things going on personalized, too. It's like, holy crap, it's like a roller coaster.
Oh, my God. I've been to the doctor so much in the past week, but I don't think I updated people since the last time I was on the show. So did I? I forget.
You might have mentioned when I came over and it was your wife's birthday and we spent her birthday in the hospital with you.
Yeah, so good news. I was having a problem with my good foot, but I'm fortunately no longer having that problem. Thankfully, it was only a deep pressure wound, or not even that, but it's not a diabetic ulcer. That's what matters.
And remember, so, exercise, stretch, and do everything they say.
Yeah, pretty much. I just have to get comfortable. So sorry, folks. I have to readjust for a sec. But yeah, so keep off of it.
Oh, he's crushing his balls.
So yeah, basically got to keep off of it. Make sure I'm not transferring on the heel of my foot, which is how I move to different seating positions off my wheelchair and whatnot. But the surgeon looked at me and said, well, I don't want to see you again, but what you're doing is working. Hopefully I don't see you again. So good luck, Mike, and... get out. So that worked out rather well. This morning, went to the doctor's yet again for an unrelated thing. That turned out okay. It turned out I had questions about a pill I'd seen on TV, and I was like, huh, so that's how that works.
Blue Chew, huh?
Oh, yeah. But I was asking all these diabetic questions.
Well, good,
It was just so weird how certain TV commercials tend to leave out the relevant information. But it's weird because in Canada, we don't get as many of the American commercials.
Because there's laws about what they can and can't say, or what they can lead you to and what they can't lead you to.
Yeah, because one of the drugs I was on for a long time is going through a huge lawsuit in the States where one of the risks of being on this drug is amputations. I rolled the dice on that and lost. So,
and also remember too, just because a pill is the same name, sometimes it can have a slightly different formula in a different country.
So yeah.
We might not have the exact same pill.
Yeah, it was not fun. But either way, that came out okay. And then, because as you guys know, I'm in a wheelchair. And so when I go somewhere, I have to take a specialized taxi, as we don't have our own car right now. So we call our taxi company, and it takes an hour to get to us because there aren't too many of these specialized taxis in Guelph.
I think I remember saying there's eight total.
Eight total. This morning there was only three or four on the road because of repairs, people being off, etc.
For a city of 130,000 people.
So that's a lot. So normally they're pretty quick. So anyway, I go to get in this cab, and this older woman says, "This is my cab." I'm thinking, "Wait, whoa, wait, what? I've been here for an hour and a half." "Well, did you call ahead?" "No, then not my problem." She tried to go up the ramp before me.
She tried to do a wheelchair cab jacking.
Yeah, she tried to cab jack me. I was like,
"Was she in a wheelchair as well?"
Yeah. Well, I was like,
you should have settled it like everybody in wheelchair settles it, murder ball, right? Like,
but yeah, just jousting at each other. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I'm thinking, well, you got to plan ahead. And Blair, bless her heart, plans ahead. She plans our return. She calls. Yep. She has everything all figured out. And this person just thought, because another wheelchair van pulled up, they tried to jack it.
She thought, and unfortunately, why some people think, I'm elderly, I automatically get preferential treatment. When the reality is, disabled is disabled, disabled. There's no differentiation between that. If you book it, you book it.
Yeah. I mean, no offense, lady. I've been waiting over an hour and change, too. I just thought ahead. So
yeah, exactly.
But in my defense, my cab driver did say, "All right, lady, I'll swing back. Just let me drop off these guys first." So I'm pretty sure she got home. She just had to wait an extra 15 minutes.
And she was probably cussing you out the second she got on the van. "How dare he? Blah, 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 blah. I didn't go through two wars in the snow. Blah, da, da, da."
Walking both ways uphill. Wait, what?
Wheeling both ways.
I was very confused.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good. You getting that under check. Anything else going on with you?
Not a whole hell of a lot. Although, I love YouTube's algorithm, because sometimes I'll get these really weird suggested things, and I love it when these things come up. And this weekend, I purchased a movie.
Sorry, it's making me think, like, the time I was at your place years ago, and I decided to like the Harlequin Baby videos.
Yeah, don't look that up, folks. It's a terrible genetic thing.
It fucked your algorithm up so bad.
Yeah, that's why I don't let people touch my computer.
Because of me. Sorry, everyone.
But anyway, so I purchased this movie. It's called Above Majestic. And it talks about extraterrestrial life. And it is seriously the most batshit insane thing I have ever seen in my life.
It's Chariot of the Gods if it was created by somebody on acid.
Like, it's weird. The guy claims he's an alien time traveler. He lived on Mars for 5 years and all this other really weird shit. And you're like, okay, let's say some of this is true. No one's ever going to believe you.
There's a point where you have to, it's the Alex Jones thing. You have to mitigate what you're saying. Pick your battles or you sound like a crazy person.
Yeah.
You can't report on every conspiracy all the time and believe every single one of them, or you're labeled crazy. Even if like 40% of them are real, nobody will believe any of them.
Yeah. Like, this one is, I'll tell you, folks, it's a watch. That's all I can say about that. So what about you? That's my week, from doctors to aliens. Yeah. What do you got?
I had a couple of visits where I visited you guys in Guelph real early in the morning, because I had some doctor's visits, and it's a lot better taking the train early than it is to take a bus for 2 hours. So had some more appointments at the weight loss clinic, just to sort of get see where I am, get back on track, diet classes, all that fun stuff. And then... as of actually today, my father, who I talked about before, had some health scares and had to have some surgery and stuff, and moved in with me the last 2 months, had a second surgery, a minor one to sort of fix an issue, and he should be getting back anytime now. So He might walk in the background. Who knows? So he's all good, which is it's always good to hear that Papa Richie's okay. I have been getting things for review, getting the back to school guide, you know, sort of finalized in the planning stages. That'll be out this week. I have not been doing a whole heck of a lot else because it finally started to cool down. It was so hot in the last week or so. I was like, I'm not leaving. And then it randomly cooled down. So that's cool. I have been basically locking myself in the air-conditioned area and playing review games and stuff that I had to get out because some of these games that we've been getting lately, they're more involved and longer and harder.
And speaking of that, coming up on today's show, we will have an extended review in our first review before we hit the news today. We're going to be taking a look at Remedy's Control, which is done by the same guys who did Alan Wake. And a couple years ago, they did Quantum Break, which is one of my favorite games on the Xbox. One of my first platinums, actually. So we'll be looking at that. Alex has had this game for probably about 2 weeks.
Yeah, two and a half weeks or so.
So we're one of the few lucky outlets that got it early. So we're really looking forward to sharing our thoughts on that. Also in the show, I'll be taking a look at Warner Brothers Home Entertainment's Godzilla King of the Monsters. Hint, I really liked it. And then we're going to look at a special double feature from Vinegar Syndrome. And of course, we have to talk about the big elephant in the room that happened in the Marvel Cinematic Universe this week and the expo that was D23 that happened in Anaheim and so much more. We'll be back right here on This Week in Geek. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the producer. We'll be back, guys, right after this.
Okay, so we're about a day away from release of Remedy's Control, and I'm now able to talk about my experiences with it. I received it a few weeks early to review and on the Xbox One X, and I had a mostly positive experience with this game, and I'm going to end up recommending it, but I do want to get a few hiccups and issues out of the way early that may or may not affect you when you're playing it, depending on the platform you're on and depending on if they patch it or not. So basically, I was not able to complete the last mission of the game due to what seemed to be erratic difficulty spikes and some buggy issues. I fell through the ground a few times where I shouldn't have, which I received a email explaining that there's a day one patch that, you know, is actually already patched on my system, and it will be on everybody else's system as well. That's supposed to alleviate some of the issues they were having with some quality control issues with some things falling through. But I had it crash my system three times, even after the patch was applied. One where it completely froze, and I actually had to unplug my Xbox One X from the wall directly. Like, it wouldn't even reset holding the power button down, which was odd. And two times where it just crashed out of the game. Now, that's to be expected when you're playing a game early and it doesn't have a final patch on it. But this had a day one patch on it, which is odd to me. So it shouldn't be happening, but you know, it doesn't seem to be happening from other things that I've seen other reviews starting to come out now the same day, and on other platforms it doesn't seem to be an issue. It might just be localized to the Xbox as far as an issue goes, and again, it's something that will easily be patched out. Now, the other thing is there were some pretty big difficulty spikes and jumps that didn't seem to make a lot of sense in this game. One of the features they advertised is that it has one difficulty for all, meaning you don't get to select any difficulty. To me, that's not a feature. To me, like, to be praised, that's kind of lazy. You kind of should have the ability to alter some things, or it should dynamically realize that some areas are harder than others. And it would be fine if it wasn't for weird difficulty spikes. The game is very difficult in the first mission, and then becomes easy for the next five or six missions. And then as you ramp up to the end of the game, it becomes nigh impossible, at least in my experience on the Xbox One X. This is not a game where it gets hard and getting better or getting good, I'm just saying in quotes, will allow you to pass. There's not a lot of skill-based difficulty with this. It seems to be fairly randomized with the actual enemies. I died where I decided that there's no way I can complete it until patches made to it, or if I come back later and something's been done, is there is a mission near the end of the game, which I can't really talk about because it reveals too much of the story, where you have to go through an area and there's different waves of enemies coming at you. Well, the waves are supposed to be, at least in the rest of the game, fairly set. So if you die, you can come back and then continue with it, and those enemies will be dead and they won't respawn again, or it'll be the same enemies with the same enemy pattern, so you can learn it and sort of move forward. Not so much at this point. It seems like sometimes I'll get twice the amount of enemies spawning, which I can kill, or sometimes they'll be more powerful, or they'll regenerate their health. Things that were different, and not every experience is the same that way. So I died a record 92 times, and at the same spot, for different reasons. Not dying the same way, completely different. To the point where I was so frustrated, I was ready to throw my controller through the TV like I was 5 years old again. And I've not felt that frustrated in probably 25 years. So I thought, okay, it's got to be, you know, something with, you know, a bug or something I'm doing wrong. And as far as I can tell, no, it's just that's just how that part of the game is designed, or at least how it's behaving. And that's also the area where my system froze a bunch of times. So, you know, it's probably just something that can be patched out. So when that happens, I'll get to it. The only other issue I have with the game, other than, you know, that, is the load times are kind of surprising. This is for me, it's a digital game installed on my Xbox One X. Every time I die, it takes 60 seconds to load, which is odd. This is a new system. This isn't an old hard drive or anything I'm using it on, or an external drive. It's the internal drive. The system is less than a year old. It's odd that it takes a minute to load every single time. So think about that. That was 92 times dying at the same spot, each time taking 60 seconds to load, and then you have to, like, you load at a checkpoint, and you have to run around and get back to where you were. It should just respawn you right before that issue. But again, there's only one save file for this game, and it auto-saves the entire time. You don't have the ability to make other saves. So it's sort of in that vein of, like, Dark Souls-y, I guess. So that, you know, and this is not a case of me just not being a good player, because I've seen reviews coming out now, and they are interesting in that even the ones that are coming out on Xbox talking about how great it is, not really listing anything wrong with the difficulty. But I kind of know that I'm farther ahead than some of these people. At least on Xbox, I'm, you know, challenging them to basically prove that they've beaten the game. Because I can look at my trophies, and right now it lists, because this is a day before release, so every single person playing on Xbox will be a reviewer. And I've looked at my trophy for the last mission that I was on and that I received in the story mode, and I am one of 2% of people that have received it. Meaning 2% of the reviewers on Xbox have gotten as far as I have or further. So read into that what you will. I think some people are actually reviewing the game without completing it and saying that they have, which I'm not going to. I will, if there's a patch to this game, I will come back and I will beat it, and I'll mention again, you know, what I think. But I don't think it's going to change my overall review. So getting that negative out of the way, here is the positive. So this game, Control, was on my radar for quite some time. It was one of the best things I saw at E3 for multiple years. And you basically play a character named Jesse who shows up at a government building to investigate where your brother's been gone. Your brother's been gone for like 14 years. And you are investigating a building that you think the government owns, that where they maybe kidnapped your brother, and they know where your brother is. You go in and it's completely empty, save for a janitor. So you meet up with the janitor, and he's like, oh, you're the new person for the new job. Okay, go meet the director. So you go into the building, you go see the director. Everything seems odd that everything's missing. Once you walk in, you meet the director, or you go to meet the director, you find out he's killed himself. And you pick up his gun, and after picking up his gun, you get flooded with a bunch of weird hallucinogenic things, and you start walking around the building, and you realize this is like a hybrid. The building is very much like something you see out of the X-Files, where you're inside it, and the building shifts and grows, almost like a living building, and people are being possessed by this thing called the Hiss, which is like an otherworldly entity. And you've got to sort of break people out of containment, and you've got to sort of help them retake the building while uncovering their past. And the agency itself, the Bureau of Control, is very much Like I said, sort of like an X-Files-y type mixture with that, and like Warehouse 13 odd objects. Like there's a floppy disk that has a power that if you touch it, it gives you the power to like pick things up and throw them. You can levitate. There's certain things you get, and they're weird objects. Like it'll be like a refrigerator that if you take your eyes off of it, will kill you. Sort of weird, fun, interesting things. Very like Lovecraftian sort of influences as well. And it's the controls in this, you know, no pun intended, are fantastic. You feel like you're like everything you could do in this game has weight to it. It has flow. There's great physics. There's tons of destructible environments. The narrative story is pretty good. You can tell it's a foreign thing still because they're not the best at necessarily at giving you context for the story. It just sort of happens as it goes. But the more you play, the better the lore becomes and the more enveloped you get into the story. And it's pretty good that way. It doesn't give you really any choices. They say that this game is very open and nonlinear, and it is out to a certain point where you can sort of pick how you tackle the game, but you still have to complete certain things in a specific order. And they're just not telling you how to complete it in that order. You can go and do some side missions and stuff, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, hold your hand. And I wish it kind of did in some parts, because there are some areas where you're like, you could spend like 3 hours trying to figure out a puzzle only to give up, find out that, oh, you can't do that puzzle for the next little while. And it didn't really give you any reason as to why you couldn't complete it till then. So there's a little bit of trial and error. It's a little bit Dark Souls-y, a little bit Metroidvania-like in the game, which is cool. Graphically, it's pretty impressive. Again, I'm playing it on the Xbox One X. If you played it on PC and you had like a GTX, RTX, you know, video card, you could play it with ray tracing and lighting. And there was a whole guide on that I received, that if you were playing it that way, there's a whole bunch of lighting effects and stuff it does. It looks really neat, but I don't have, you know, $1,000 video card. So I'm playing it on the Xbox One X, which is the best console experience you're going to be able to get graphically. Kind of surprised that there's no HDR, which is funny because I just got an HDR TV. So it, you know, it plays in the standard, you know, dynamic range, but it looks fantastic playing it on my, I don't know if it's playing in 4K. There was no mention of that. It looks to me that it's either playing, you know, rendering it like 1080p, but then at 60 frames, or 1440p or something, and then upscaling it to 4K. That being said, I do receive slowdown at certain parts of the game, which is a little surprising, but again, that can be patched up fairly easy if they optimize things as the game comes out. As far as audio goes, it's got a great atmospheric soundtrack. It's in surround sound. There are certain parts of the game that have music created for the game. There's not really any licensed music. It's all music they've created. There's lots of little things in this game, like television sets you can watch that show you little weird clips. There's projectors. The more things you collect and read in this game, the more you're going to get out of it. As far as connections to previous Remedy titles, I found a secret room off the beaten path that you wouldn't necessarily easily find, that you have to have the levitate ability to get to. And I opened up a document, and it was talking about Alan Wake. It seems to be sort of connected in like a multiverse type thing, which is pretty cool. I was hoping to see that there'd be like a Quantum Break connection or something, but nothing that I could see, at least so far. They seem to have taken the engine from Quantum Break and then really tweaked it and made the shooting and action better. So they took that as a base, sort of how you walk around and interact, but really amped up the quality and the control of the actual action, which is fantastic. So I really, really, really like this game. It would be like a 9 out of 10 for me if I didn't have the weird issues with some crashing and some of the graphical, you know, hiccups with like the load times and sometimes slowdown on an Xbox One X, which is surprising, and the difficulty spikes that seem to be wrong. It seems to be problems with the AI, or, you know, being too difficult. But, you know, that's just me. We'll see how many people actually are able to complete it on the Xbox, or if they have, you know, patches added to it later on. But, you know, that takes it down a point or so for me. It's still like a good 70, you know, out of 100, even with the issues I've been having. If they patch that out, it's like a 9 out of 10. So should you pick up, you know, Control's game, you know, whatever platform you want, I would say pick it up on PC if you can, because it's going to be your best experience, especially it's going to get more patches. The PlayStation seems to be another great platform. Pick it up on Xbox. Pick it up however you want to play it. But just do note, you might have the same experience I do when it comes to the difficulty. But if you are, you know, okay with that, then, you know, have at it, because it's one of the best games released this year.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
And welcome back to Twig the Flags from Stupidity. My God, has it been a news week? I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the producer. Normally I have a spiel where I talk about the halls of history, monuments of stone. We're skipping all that shit this week as we're breaking it down the brass tacks this week. And of course we gotta talk about how mom and dad had a fight this week. Oh, it's a bad one because the kids suffer. Spider-Man is leaving the MCU. And it's hard to pick a side in this, though. The more I read about it, the more I'm inclined to fall on Sony's side. Basically, what it boils down to is both sides could not come to a new agreement on how to use the Spider-Man character. They wanted to change producing credits to 50-50, profit sharing, etc., etc. That Disney wanted to change the terms of the agreement, and Sony outright said no. There's been a variety of different rumors and reports. Supposedly, one report I read is that Sony said, well, give us $10 billion and the character's yours. And it's not like Disney couldn't afford that.
Yeah, because they're figuring, because they had, was it like a 90-10 split originally? Something like that?
It was something like 5%. And they got all the merchandising.
Yeah.
But Sony got all the profits or something like that.
Basically, Sony put up all the money to make it. And then mm-hmm. and then half of the marketing was handled, I think, by Marvel as well. So I think all the marketing was done by Marvel. All of the production was done by Sony. All of the merch was done by Marvel. And Sony got distribution rights to the movie. Like, for the, when they had to sell it to... So I understand why they're doing this, because Marvel wants the right to put that film and anything Spider-Man related on the Disney Plus app. And right now they won't be able to. Like, even Far From Home probably won't be on the app, because it's distributed completely by Sony. So they would have to renegotiate, or they'd have to negotiate that, basically, right? So they're, and Sony's looking at this like, this is our first $1.1 billion property. The only thing that they've had that even came close to that is the Jumanji movie, the second one. So they've never had anything like this. So they're like $10 million. That's not an unreasonable amount, because if they think they can parlay this into, let's say that they can do two more films, you know, with the same person, maybe three films. Let's say they can do three films, plus if they can properly spin off things, like, not, we're not talking Venom, we're talking, you know, in the same feeling and whatever, if they wanted to make it all part of that Spider-Verse, whatever. And then there's the cartoon movies and everything. That's not unreasonable, $10 billion for the total license value for the next however many years they have it. So they're like, they basically didn't, they didn't say, here, give us an astronomical amount of money. They said, give us what we think we can make off of this for the next 5 years.
Like, it's kind of strange, because you can kind of telegraph that things maybe had been in trouble for a while, because you look at Marvel Phase 4, which is only in essence 2 to 3 years at most kind of covered out, and it's pretty light on Spider-Man type stuff, even with the D23 announcements of the new shows.
To be honest, the Phase 4 looks weak in general. There's a lot of properties that are untested.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I have a problem with is this deal was inked back in 2014, so they were looking... They built, with Avengers Endgame and Civil War, introducing Spidey into the MCU, they built a lot of big storylines around him. Now they were building him to be the next Iron Man, to anchor point the MCU. With the big spoiler at the end of Far From Home, how he's outed as Spider-Man by Mysterio, and everybody knows who he is. That's a ripple effect that will go across the MCU. Now, Sony has said they're still trying to get the director. I think his name is John Watts, I want to say. John something.
Okay.
So they're probably going to continue with the same direction and tone
yeah.
that they had with it, but they can't reference anything that happened in the other movies. So
which means it's okay, but at the same time, consider this. With people were saying, oh, well, this is going to suck because it's not going to have the same feeling or whatever. No. This was already in the works. The part of the big deal here why Marvel wants it is this is the first property in the MCU not produced. Like, really, they only had their name on it. They had no fingers in it really at all, except for giving, like, the crossover support. Like, here's our notes on how we want it integrated. If you take away the integration aspects, the last two films have been fantastic. And they had nothing to do with Marvel. Marvel and Disney want their hands on everything. They want the biggest piece of the pie. And Sony's like, no. And as long as Sony doesn't dramatically change the direction of the films, they're on point to do at least another $600-700 million on the next one. They might not do the billion, but they might, because the last two films have been great.
Yeah, well, like, if they still have the advantage is that Tom Holland has at least one more option on his contract for another Spider-Man, and probably a fourth one as well. They're trying to work that out right now. There were some comments from him and Kevin Feige this past weekend at D23 in Anaheim saying we've had a great relationship over the last 5 years. Don't worry. I'm still going to be playing Spider-Man for the foreseeable future. We're still going to have fun. Don't worry about it. We can always come back to the table or something along those lines. So the deal isn't dead yet. They still have time to work this shit out. I think they will, because shit talks, or how does that phrase go?
Money talks, shit walks.
Exactly. So you know what? At the end of the day, if Disney really wants it, and I really think they should, simply because of the direction that they've been building to with the Spider-Man character being cemented, because at one point, Marvel, I remember this very clearly, some of the videos I've watched on this, saying Marvel has plans for 9 films with Spidey in it. So put up the $10 billion and shut the fuck up and go home.
Yeah, or offer something better than 50-50. You want more control? Okay, take 25% and then give $1 billion or $2 billion to them.
I mean, ultimately, you want to make the shareholders happy. You want to make the fans happy. Like, considering how much internet and fan drama this is, hell, even Jeremy Renner spoke out about this. So fucking Hawkeye's mad.
Well, not just that, like, The other thing is people are going to start – Disney doesn't realize it, but the people are going to start to be wary of them. The larger you become, the more evil big corporation you look.
Yeah.
It looks like Disney trying to squash every studio out there, regardless of you know, Sony's huge. Like, they are one of the top four biggest studios in the world. But Sony can't lose face on this. You got to remember, they're a Japanese company at core. And it to them, it's insulting what Disney's doing.
Well, when this deal happened, this was just after the Sony hack.
Yeah.
So they made this deal to prop themselves up. And now they're probably looking at saying, maybe we don't need Marvel, because Into the Spider-Verse won Oscars.
Yes, and they've got more in production. And the word of mouth on that is, if the next one comes out, it's going to do double the bank that it did in the first one, because the first one was like, it was weird because the last time we had a theatrical, animated superhero movie was like Mask of the Phantasm. So like, and that was a abysmal failure in theaters. This was a huge hit. So you've got that. They've also got Jumanji. The next Jumanji is going to make $1 billion. It's going to make more than the last one. It will make $1 billion. No problem. They've got, several other series that they're working on. I believe Sony doesn't need them. Sony has the
Venom. They got Morbius. Well, not just that.
They're the ones producing the what's the Valiant series? All those comic books. They have that license for that. So they got Bloodshot coming out with Vin Diesel. Like, they're working with other comic studios to get their own universes built. So as long as they keep Spider-Man as an anchor for everything else, they look at it, they're like, we have a $1 billion franchise that we can do $1 billion a year with. And if our contract is for another 5 years, we have at least $5 billion that we can make off of this. So it's insulting for them to be like, we want 50-50 and offer nothing from it. They offered them nothing and just said, we want 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, a lot of the sources that have spoken with entertainment blogs and Variety and Deadline and all that have spoken under anonymity. So no one really knows what happened outside of the people that were in that room. But my guess is we'll see something resolved in the next year or two.
Yeah. It's also an issue of studio heads apparently not liking each other.
Yeah, that's another concern and rumor that I'd also heard, too. I mean, ultimately, we'll see what happens. I trust Kevin Feige. I really do.
Yeah, and I can't remember for the life of me the Sony head, but that's the person I think that came in charge after the hacks and leaks came out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've that person has done such a job of really fixing Sony's image.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see what happens when Mom and Dad decide to sit down and talk again. Regardless, we're still getting Spider-Man movies, so go them, and we'll see what happens. Speaking of movie news, keeping along with this, this one surprised me. This one came out as the same day as the Spider-Man news. Way to get overshadowed. But one of the Wachowskis, Lana, has come out and said there's going to be a Matrix 4. Sorry. So Warner Brothers and Village Roadshow Pictures are set to produce and globally distribute the new Matrix movie. It's supposed to come out, I think, in 2021, give or take. 2019 marked the 20th anniversary of the Matrix. I know you could see it in theaters within the last, with like this past summer, I want to say. But yeah, so they said, and I quote, we could not be more excited to re-enter the Matrix with Lana. Lana is a true visionary, a singular and original creative filmmaker, and we are thrilled that she's writing, directing, and producing this new chapter in the Matrix universe. So they're going to begin production next year at some point.
And Keanu is one of the producers on it, too.
Yep, he's coming back. Carrie Ann Moss is coming back. So Neo and Trinity are back. They haven't mentioned anything about Lawrence Fishburne, Morpheus.
Yeah, there was a bit of a talk after we did our Cambridge Chronicles live stream in the, I guess, the crew chat. You had already gone. Justin was talking with us about it, and he was reading a little more into it. Because I guess he played the MMO, I think. Yep. Did you play it as well?
Yep. Yep.
He goes, I'll bet, basically he said he'll bet his left nut, but he didn't say his left nut, that what they're doing with it is a storyline from the game where the Matrix gets rebooted and Morpheus dies within the Matrix, but his consciousness doesn't die and gets reincarnated into a new body, like a younger kid.
That's what they want to do, because some of the rumors I've heard about this is they're looking for a younger Morpheus.
Yeah, so if that's – he goes – because he saw that rumor and he's like – he goes, dude, I know – he goes, if they're doing that, I know what they're doing. And he said it was one of the best storylines in the MMO. I guess the idea behind it is it's about Neo going in and trying to find Morpheus.
I remember the storyline vaguely. There are some people online that sum this up. So if you search Matrix Online story, someone sums this up. But yeah, basically, the Morpheus dies, but he's not truly dead. There's this other machine called the Colonel, and he wants to restart the war for some reason.
Yeah, there's some. He said something about how there's a loophole that the AI finds, where it's like it gives you the choice whether or not to be in there, but if you choose to stay in there, it wipes your memory of ever having the choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what ends up happening is a lot of people, you know, make them, they find a way, a loophole to keep people in there without telling them that they had a choice, which, you know, logically is not technically wrong based on the loophole they found. But the reason they're trying to find Morpheus is if they can unlock his memory, he'll have a way, because he's sort of half, he's from the previous generation of the software, so he basically will have a way out, whereas Neo, with the new version of the software, apparently doesn't have all his powers. So it's like, how do we have a backdoor into the old version source code sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this because I always was a huge fan of the Matrix universe. I mean, yeah. I played the games Enter the Matrix, Path of Neo. I played the MMO for a few months. And I remember when it shut down back in 2009. and they wanted to have this big end world event, and it screwed up. Everybody watched it happen in slow-mo, and it was ridiculously weird and stupid. But this is cool.
Well, and Keanu's on a roll.
Well, yeah, because he's did... what's he done? He's done John Wick. They just finished filming Bill and Ted Face the Music this past week.
He's got that. He's got the other John Wick 4 coming out in production. He has The Continental. He's producing the TV show based on the universe. Mm-hmm. So he's got Cyberpunk. The next 2 years is insane for him.
Yeah, he's reinvented his career. I mean, basically, The Matrix was the movie that turned Keanu from just being like, Keanu Reeves into like, being like a,
teen,
a mega
like a
force.
Teen young heartthrob actor who did basic Speed was the first time that he could do anything other than just teenage movies. Mm-hmm. And then The Matrix comes out and it turns him into a worldwide phenomenon. And then from then on, he tried doing movies like Street Kings was good, but the problem was that he never really, capitalized on the fame of that movie until John Wick, and he's like in his 50s.
So. Yeah, like John Wick was his career renaissance, kind of like how John Travolta really came back with Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
It reinvented himself. So this is going to be cool when it happens. I remember at one point they were talking about having Michael B. Jordan in it because they wanted to do a Matrix reboot, but since they're just continuing on the original storyline, supposedly. Well,
Michael B. Jordan could be the younger Morpheus.
That would be fucking cool.
That's what we were talking about on the crew chat. It was like, and we're like, oh, well, all the women aged 15 to 30 are going to go see it now.
Hell, dudes will go see it. That exactly. Guy is awesome in Apollo.
He's awesome, and he's good looking, and he's charming. That's all need.
Yeah, he's got that charisma, and he's got that Lawrence Fishburne charisma where you want to hear what he has to say next.
And you know what? You look at him, you can see in his eyes that he's a genuine person, which is like it's hard to explain until you look at him. You're like, he seems like a fun guy to hang out with, and that's what you kind of want for these kind of movies.
Absolutely, like 100%. This is going to be cool. We'll find out when this movie probably comes out, 2021. Either way, Matrix 4. Let's hope. All right, moving on to our next story. So once again, continuing with a little bit of D23 news, they showed off the first trailer for The Mandalorian, which is set to premiere on Disney Plus November 12th in a bunch of territories, which tells the tale. It's set 5 years after Return of the Jedi. The Empire has collapsed. The New Republic hasn't yet fully established a full grip as a new form of government. So think of it as the Old West. And the first full trailer for this shows the titular Mandalorian basically going out for more bounties, but looks like he's after a little girl.
Played by Pedro Pascal.
And his payment is this, I think it's supposed to be the stuff that he makes his armor and weapons out of. So basically, here's a bunch of money, go bring these people to me. But you see an IG series assassin droid. It's not IG-88. I did look into that. So I think it's supposed to be IG-11.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Though it's voiced by Taika Waititi. So that'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
And you see an AT-ST shooting at him. You see, actually, the gun he has in it, one of them, it's the same gun he used in the 1977 or 78, whatever, the like holiday special. That's the same gun, so that's a throwback to that. You see just spaceships and fights, no Jedi to be seen anywhere.
Nope. You see Gina Carano, so I basically pitched a tent in my pants.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, is right. You got fucking Carl
Weathers.
She plays
a former shock trooper.
Which is awesome.
Which means she's the elite of the elite stormtroopers.
And she's like, she's an elite MMA fighter, so she can do all her own stunts.
Yeah, so that's going to be cool. Carl Weathers, I think, plays the head of the bounty hunting guild.
Is it bad that I really hope in my mind, I'm going to just view him as this Predator character the entire time? Just the whole time. And the best part is he's grown his mustache back, so he looks even more awesome.
Yeah, like this, it looks cool. And there's, I think, eight episodes. One premieres each week, so you can't binge the series, which I'm kind of okay with. It means I can't run out of it at once.
It looks extremely high budget.
Oh yeah, like this, like, looks fantastic.
The fact that they've got a lot of practical effects and a lot of digital effects, but like, you know how the Clone Wars was deceptively really good CG for the space stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people were surprised at how good it looked for a cartoon. This is like that for live action. It's like at the Swamp Thing level or Game of Thrones level of special effects. It's like a movie. It's like they, I can't imagine them not have spending at least $100 million to make those 8 episodes.
Something like that. I think we talked about this a while back. I think the budget was like $120 million.
Yeah. Or like
something
it's,
along those lines.
That's right. It was that. The only thing more expensive than it for it was the last season of Game of Thrones and the upcoming Lord of the Rings show, which is like, what, a stupid $1 billion or something stupid they're spending on that.
I'd rather them spend that on Star Wars and Lord of the Rings. If I had to pick a property, I'm going Star Wars. But yeah, I mean, this is going to be fantastic. And I remember them talking about the Star Wars live action show all the way back in the friggin' 90s. So this is something we've been waiting literally decades for. I think it's going to pay off.
Yeah, of course.
Like, and, Jesus. And then they confirmed Obi-Wan Kenobi's getting his own Disney Plus because he was rumored for years he's going to get his own movie, and then Solo didn't do so well, so they canceled the movie.
Do it this way.
And Boba Fett. Yeah, I'd rather have a TV show for 8 hours.
And the service is launching in Canada, which means all these originally produced things are going to go there. We're not going to have to worry about getting it on Crave or some other platform. I wouldn't be surprised if it has a second run on like Space or something, because usually we have those weird deals where we'll get a cable show that everywhere else gets on digital, but it depends on how Disney wants to market it. If they're going to market the app and have it successful in Canada, they have to keep a lot of the content exclusive. Mm-hmm. So you've got that. The other things that were premiered there that they showed off were a reality show called Encore, hosted by Kristen Bell, that is about people in their like 30s and 40s or even older who always wanted to do musicals that life changed around them, you know, circumstances. One person is disabled and didn't think he could ever do it, blah, blah, blah. And it's about them putting on a musical production, which
That's
looks
cool.
Interesting. Then there's High School, the musical, the movie, the show, which is about, it's a fake mockumentary comedy about
the high school that they
filmed High School Musical at, even though it's not really that, with actors playing students at the school who then want to put on their own production of High School Musical, the movie. Like,
okay.
It's like multiple levels of meta. It's not necessarily my style, but I could see it being popular.
I know they're getting a reboot of Lizzie McGuire with Hillary Duff coming back.
Much about that. Like, I'm talking about like the trailers they showed.
Yeah.
They announced a lot of stuff like that, but stuff that's like physically coming day one. There is a movie called Noelle, which is about the Santa's daughter and son, who after he dies have to take over and hijinks, whatever, starring Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. It looks better than a direct-to-video Hallmark movie, but not better than a theatrical movie, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a decent enough for the streaming network sort of movie, and that's coming right launch day, which is weird that it's the middle of November, but I guess it makes sense. They also have a show on Jeff Goldblum. Was it The World According to Jeff Goldblum, I think it's called?
I think that's what it's called.
And it's one of those, he travels the world a la Anthony Bourdain sort of thing, where he experiences the culture. There's an episode where, and it's weird, it's his quirky band of comedy slash reality of how he is. And it shows him like learning how to give people tattoos, and then he makes a tattoo on somebody. or it shows him like, he's like, these are $12,000 sneakers. Ooh. And he's just like, we'll go and check them out and stuff. Weird things. It looks like it'll be kind of fun. Then there's the Lady and the Tramp movie, done in the style that these Dumbo...
Remakes them and done?
Yeah. It looks like it's $100 million. For that movie, I'm kind of surprised. I'm still kind of angry that they keep doing these remakes, but they keep making money. But it is the highest production values I've ever seen for a streaming thing that wasn't like... you know, Netflix is Bright or something. Like, it's kind of surprising the money they spent on this. It almost looks like they made it to put in theaters and then went, this will make the least amount of money out of all of these, even though it's going to probably be good. And they're like, we'll just put this on the platform to show the kind of premiere programming we're going to put on there. It looks super high budget, like stupid high budget.
Yeah, like Disney's got the money. They want to show off. And you know what? My wife said to me, Well, Mike, we're just going to pay for the year up front because this looks cool.
Yeah, because they're going to probably do a thing. What is it, $7.99 American?
Yeah.
So it'd be $10 Canadian. So they'll probably make it $100 for a year where you get 2 months free if you pay up front.
Yeah, so I'm like, damn, I'm down for that. Hell, I just want my Mandalorian, but everything else looks cool too.
Exactly. I mean, this is what CBS All Access should have been instead of where we here. It's hamstrung by not having any Star Trek stuff on it.
Mm-hmm. And as the back catalog grows, which it should month to month,
yeah,
it's well, only going to increase said day in one, value.
Day one, it's supposed to have the entire Disney animated theatrical film library in 1080p. It's still yet to be seen if it's surround sound, which it pisses me off that so many of them aren't. But all of the trailers for this, if you got the press access that we got, were in surround sound, even the shows that they're producing. So I'm going to assume that it's in surround sound. Like
yeah, I think day one it has 300 titles available spread across however many things.
And they showed off some old stuff, like a lot of old 60s and 70s movies, that live action ones that people forgot existed.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are complete lists out there, so go check. I think the last one I saw was on IO9. I think they posted one, so go check over there. If not, just Google Disney Plus Day 1, see what's available.
Yeah.
The next story that I want to talk about, this one...
Well, since we're staying on this, should I just talk about quickly the Hasbro thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so...
Sorry.
In doing some... I was just looking up... You know, what's movies and stuff are coming out from Entertainment One. For a little background here, for American listeners, Entertainment One is a giant conglomerate. It's basically the biggest movie studio in Canada. It's the only company that competes on the same level as like a Fox or anything, or Disney, in that they used to be like five companies. Alliance Atlantis merged, and then they were bought by them. Koch Media, a few others. If you've ever bought or seen a Canadian film or like Trailer Park Boys and everything, that was all done by Alliance Atlantis, which is now E1. So looking into them, I noticed that E1 is being purchased by Hasbro, and the deal went through or is going through it like this week. Of all things, so it's we're losing our last only major movie and television production company and distribution company. Like 90% of Canadian films are distributed by them. They have, I think, the Paramount Library they distribute in Canada. There's a few other companies that they handle distribution for on top of their own productions. A lot of TV shows that you watch, even ones for like CW and that, they'll be produced up here using people from E1. Or there's a lot of things on the Sci-Fi Channel. A lot of dramas and TV movies in the States are actually produced up here by them. So that's all going to be owned by Hasbro. And the reason for it is Peppa Pig.
Yeah, because they want to get more distribution for her or something?
Peppa Pig, apparently, I didn't realize, like, you remember those all those videos on YouTube that were taken down, those like Peppa Pig eats poo burgers and weird shit that they were making for little kids to watch? Or like Peppa Pig and Elsa have bath time, weird shit that was fucking with the algorithm?
Yeah.
Peppa Pig is a multi-billion dollar property worldwide, which I had no idea. It's like it's the equivalent of like Barney, but even bigger, like the 90s. So the big deal behind this is, in China, it's the only Western-produced preschool television show that has been officially supported by the government and approved by it, meaning that basically all preschool kids up to like age 5 in China watch it. It's like mandatory at schools and at, like, it's just... one of the only things that they watch that isn't produced by them.
Yeah, it got past the government censors.
Yeah. So we're talking in the 200 to 300 million people every week watch it there. So, and then not to mention the worldwide success as well. But like, because that's such a huge market, that's $1 billion or more a year. And that apparently made up for almost 20% of the revenue per year on top of all the big movies they produce, like big movies. It was just Peppa Pig because of the Chinese market, because they somehow got in there. So Tencent and some other companies from China wanted to buy E1. And the Canadian government like, no, we're not selling to a foreign, basically, they're not going to sell a monopolied company to a communist country, is the wording of it. They wanted to see if there were other buyers. And Hasbro's like, we'll outbid them. And Hasbro, while they do a lot of their business in China, getting their products made and everything, Hasbro is still an American company. And they offered more money than the Chinese were offering. they wanted to get into that market. They wanted to have a distribution deal in Canada. And they're like, okie dokies. So they offered like $4 billion. And it doesn't sound like much until you consider that, like, remember, the Canadian market is a tenth the size of the American market. That's the equivalent of offering between 40 and like $100 billion in the States. That's like the Disney merger type size, right? Like, it's huge. So what does this mean? It means that they won't shut down production. There are a lot of things that won't change. They won't have to change their movies or television shows to cater to the Chinese market unless they want to. Whereas had a Chinese company bought it, you would have found a lot more things being toned down or changed, which might have affected their business and actually could eventually have shut them down, all for the sake of China getting Peppa Pig. So with Hasbro buying it, what it means is they now have their own movie and television production studio that has ties mostly in Canada, but also production houses in Europe, in England. So what does that mean? It means that you're going to see a shit ton more of Hasbro licensed properties being produced by movie studios in Canada. So it'll mean like it nullifies the deal they had with Paramount. So no more Transformers on Paramount. It's going to be on E1, which is going to be huge for E1. It also means, like, you know how they have the like the bot cons and all that sort of stuff for Transformers? Mm-hmm. All that stuff's going to be up here. It means that Fan Expo, which just went on, is going to be like the mecca for Hasbro. Certain things, because their headquarters are in Toronto. So it just means that this toy company now has a built-in worldwide distribution platform for their movies and products. It means there's going to be probably not a lot of changes to the existing properties that they make. It just means a lot more stuff can be made up here. So expect a whole bunch of random fucking movies and TV shows to come out that are owned by Hasbro. It also means Power Rangers might change, because their deal with Lionsgate has only been theatrical, right? Mm-hmm. So with Hasbro owning them, do not be surprised if Power Rangers stops filming in New Zealand and starts filming in Canada instead, in BC. Which also means do not be surprised if more previous actors start showing up in it.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was 3, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
It's a lot cheaper to fly somebody from L.A. to Vancouver than it is to fly them to New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out, because I'm interested to know how this affects previous contracts and agreements, because I'm pretty sure there's some contractual agreements with Transformers and Paramount.
Oh, it'll be
and
done.
Stuff like that.
It'll be done, because remember how bad that last film was received? Bumblebee? The one before Bumblebee.
Last night?
Yeah. Do not be surprised. Like, you're probably going to see that the DVDs and Blu-rays stop selling in stores, and then they magically show up again, and they're just under the E1 label. Because, remember, they didn't own the property. They just licensed it. And that was an agreement that had been going on forever, because Hasbro had no actual production or distribution platform of their own. Well, now they have one that isn't as big as the States, but, like, if you list Fox, Disney, Columbia through Sony, Universal, Paramount, and then maybe Lionsgate, which is half American, half Canadian, they're right at the same level as Lionsgate, if not bigger. So they're one of the top 5 or 6 major distribution companies in the world. So yay, a little bit of insider stuff.
Woohoo. Well, guess we'll have to wait and see. I'm no legal expert, so you know more than me. So
there's going to be more involved in this. It won't take effect for the next couple of years, probably, for things. But I'm saying, do not be surprised if magically Power Rangers shifts to being filmed in Canada.
All right. Moving on to our next story. This one, I saw this story covered on Pat the NES Punk's YouTube channel this week, and I wanted to cover it because I think it's going to spark an interesting discussion, depending on how things go. So, a little while ago, I want to say, I'm just trying to find a date. Recently is what I'll say. A store in Missouri, located in Fenton, it's called Trade End Games, recently suffered a massive robbery, seeing $100,000 worth of video games stolen. And the owner, Jason Brassard, had said, "This was a straight-up heist. In and out stole my safe with over 150 of my most valuable games. That's all they took. If you've been to the store, see my videos, like the big boxing of the graded games there, that's what was taken, plus many, many more.
Wow.
A lot of the games that were taken were graded from Wata Games. Some of them included some of the rare 2600 games, also Sega CD. There were some posted. One of the ones that was taken was, trying to pronounce this.
Okay.
Stadium Events. Sorry, sometimes I have trouble saying S's. Also, one of the other ones was a complete copy of Little Samson, estimated to be worth over $4,000. Cheetah Men 2, which has sold anywhere in the past between $10,000 and $20,000. I'm actually going to look at a list here.
Like, I get it, but, like, to me, they're not worth that much in this digital age. But they are they're only worth it if people are willing to pay for it, and unfortunately, people are still willing to pay that kind of money.
Well, yeah, well, we discussed, I don't know whether we talked about this privately or on the show, with people getting into the collector's market now, coming in.
Yeah,
out of comic
we talked
books.
About it. Basically, people that have no idea what they're talking about and thinking that it's a commodity that will go up. But there's a difference between people that were trading in jewelry and fine metals and stuff, that those are the kind of people that would get into this. It's like, yeah, there is no digital alternative to that. Like, there is a bubble that will burst with this, and people are going to be left out of thousands of dollars, and those people are morons.
Well, it's only going to be the super rare games, or the culturally relevant,
yeah.
Like stuff like a Stadium Event. Is that culturally relevant? Kind of.
No.
But the NWC gold carts and the gray carts, those are worth something. So what? Some of the games that were taken, I'm actually just going to pull up a list here.
If they have a specific history, like Cheetah Men makes sense, because that is, you know, is if something is universally loved or reviled, that's what people want. Stadium Events is like, oh, it's because it was known as the most expensive thing. But the problem is the market will dry up. There are going to be people that buy it and then try to sell it for twice as much, or they think it's their retirement fund, and it won't be.
Well, one of the things is, with these people stealing it, they're going to be extremely hard to move, especially the stuff that's graded. So if you go to any of these, because the people that stole this, they knew what they were taking. Which means they must have some kind of indicator of the market.
Now, the question is, are they taking it just for themselves and then going to sit on it for 20 years?
That's another possibility, too. But anybody who knows about this, especially those games that are graded, those come with serial numbers. This stuff is hot. Yeah.
So what they'll do is
move this is going to be impossible.
They didn't pay a penny for it. So they'll take it out of the grading boxes, burn the fucking boxes, and then keep them for 20 years in the part of their collection, and then sell them opened for less than it would be graded. Or regrade them in 20 years.
Yeah, or they'll do what they can now to shift them for pennies on the dollar to some local collector or something like that. Now, there is a reward being offered, I think, for this. I mean, it's kind of weird just to see some of these titles go up. I mean, one of the ones that caught my eye was Captain Novaland, brand new in sleeve, which is amazing. Hagani, Final Fight Guy, Super Noah's Art 3D, some of the NES titles, all complete boxed. Bubble Bath Babes, Bonk's Adventure, which is graded. Cheetah Men 2, Chubby Cherub, Color of Dinosaur, Contra
Force. This kind of money. Now, here's the thing. Does this person have them insured?
Yes.
Okay, so you can
offer... So he's going to be made whole again.
He's gonna be, yeah, you just won't have them for the store.
Yeah, but that's
but so. Still. So because my worry was like, if you're not insured, that's a foolish thing. Now you'll still get your money back, but again, those people, they will. The amount of money stolen, that's considered grand theft.
Oh yeah, like that's so, like $100,000. That's a lot.
Yeah, theft over $10,000. That's jail time. Like we're talking prison.
And they stole the safe.
Yeah,
like that's.
Oh, they'll be caught. They'll be caught and they're fucked. But it also means that once he the store owner, you know, gets money back and everything, be smart to upgrade the security system so that insurance premiums don't go up.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm curious. Like, the part of me is incredibly curious to see how these games will get disseminated into the market. Were these people just stupid? And
yeah,
they'll sell it in a place that'll get recognized, like say like the Portland Retro Expo or Retropalooza. Will they make the effort?
Better watch out for YouTubers. Somebody like Metal Jesus and those guys, they will, like on the West Coast, they'll spot it. Like that whole crew, like I'm just using Metal Jesus Rocks as an example, is part of like, you know, a 20 or 30 person like YouTube's friend ring sort of on the West Coast. They're already going to have their eyes out for it.
Oh yeah.
They will catch you on video trying to sell it.
Oh yeah. Like somebody, this is going to pop up at an auction or on a Craigslist. Like these guys are not going to go to a pawn shop. They know what they're worth. And this was going to go to the second part of this conversation is Pat was talking and he said, sometimes people are going to see an article like this and get ideas. And you think about how many people post game room tours and think about how many people trade video games and sell video games. Like, for example, you used to see my collection.
Yeah.
What's to stop some scumbag from coming and robbing me?
Because
now they see it's a hot commodity.
There's still less things to happen. Also, it's less likely to happen to a person directly, especially in the States, because that's a way to get fucking shot, like bad.
But it still could happen now, because now people see it as a commodity.
People saw it as a commodity years ago. That could have happened years ago for anything. Like, yeah, it's no different than a museum.
But I'm saying now that this made national news, people are going to start to think about it now.
People are going to think about that, but what it's also going to do is this is going to force people with large collections to get better security measures installed.
Or more insurance,
or a fucking gun in the like. It's sad, but this is the next articles you see about this are going to be somebody shot somebody stealing from their home. It's how it's going to be. Or you're going to have people that have security systems, not just like a single camera pointed down. They'll put fucking cameras on the ground pointed up so you can see their face, even if they're like, people are going to get more ingenious that way. Also, you don't let anybody show up. Like when people are doing game room tours, it's usually like a YouTuber or somebody that you can trace back to.
Yeah, but also think about way back, or like just think about how some people, they say, hey, I have this, I want to trade for this. You invite them to your house. Sometimes people don't think about that.
A lot of times, I would say if you're uncomfortable, meet at a coffee shop.
Yeah, do it someplace public. But I thought Pat raised a very interesting point there where you get the right dumb young idiot. Stuff could happen, and I don't mean to be alarmist.
And it's true, but it happens. It can happen anyway. You've heard stories about people on Craigslist being robbed for their laptops and stuff. If it was going to happen, it's going to happen. I don't think necessarily it's going to happen more often. I just think that it might make people think twice about how they present their things.
Yeah, or how they have their collections and whatnot. Because, like I said, it got me thinking. Specifically, I had a friend of mine. He has a very extensive game room, and he wasn't shy about showing it off. And about to say, dude, you're lucky somebody just doesn't rob you someday.
And at the same time, it's not like that people going to steal it have to know it's harder to move these items. It's not like you're stealing somebody's gold and you can melt it down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's it's a lot easier to fence jewelry and precious metals than it is to fence a game. It's like fencing a private art collection. You know what I mean? It's more difficult.
More difficult, but an unscrupulous pawn shop owner could be like, I'll take that rare game. Here's $50. And then they can resell it for whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So it can happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But say it's an interesting conversation point. Do I expect it to happen? Probably not. Obviously, take steps to protect yourself if you're selling or trading online or in person. And just don't invite yourself to be a target. Thankfully, this guy is going to be made whole again. I know Pat shipped him a carton of his Ultimate NES Guide books to help out. He's like, don't even worry about it. Just sell the books. Help out the store. Help out the community such as it is. So hopefully these games will show up and there'll be a follow-up story because I'm curious to know where these things will end up. So that's pretty much what we got for this edition of the news here on This Week in Geek. It's been a long conversation point. And coming up next is going to be me taking a look at Godzilla, King of the Monsters from Warner Bros. Home Entertainment. So we'll be back right after this, only on This Week in Geek, otherwise known as the flagship of stupidity. We are looking at Godzilla, King of the Monsters from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital. This movie came out earlier this year in theaters, and obviously, gigantic monsters beating the ever-living crap out of each other. What could possibly go wrong? Well, surprisingly, this movie didn't do too well in theaters, but there still is going to be a sequel where it has King Kong versus Godzilla. That should be awesome. That comes out, I want to say, next year or the year after. But anyway, this movie features the titular Godzilla facing off against more titans, which are being awakened around the world for, turns out, an environmental reason. This movie actually has a cool environmental message kind of sprinkled in throughout it. It stars the lady from The Conjuring, a.k.a. Lorraine Warren, Eleven from Stranger Things, and basically, hilarity ensues. Although, no, the real story basically centers around them using a device called the Orca, which is able to communicate with these titans, and they end up getting used for kind of like a terrorist plot where they plan to help restore the balance between people and titans, and it doesn't exactly go as planned. There's also a family story in here as well, but the main reason you're coming to this is not for the human organization known as Monarch, which basically hunts down these monsters. No, you want to see big monsters kicking the crap out of each other. In this movie, you get Rodan, Mothra, King Ghidorah, which looks friggin' awesome. And of course, Godzilla in a new, different, mutated form. And it's pretty much a 2.5-hour monster-kicking wicked fest. That's all I can really describe it as. And it's cool how the producers of this movie are fleshing out the Monsterverse. There are references to Kong Skull Island. They talk about other titans around the world. They reference the 2014 movie. And it makes the universe feel a little bit bigger. Like, the sequel, which we'll inevitably get, seems primed to be wicked and awesome. They're like, what is a king to a god? And wow, I'm so looking forward to this. So the movie itself is surprisingly good. I think it went by really fast. A lot of critics were kind of mixed on it. I thought it was really, really, really cool. I had a lot of fun with it. To talk about the disc itself and its special features, there's a lot here, a lot more than I was expecting. There's a director's commentary, deleted scene, extensive special features, forgive me. There's stuff that talks about how they did certain scenes, like the temple in China where they found Mothra. They talk about Rodan's character design. They talk about designing Godzilla, making him look a little bit tougher and meaner in this movie. One of the cool things that they show is the behind the scenes of them doing the motion capture. So you see people in the Godzilla mocap suit. Turns out King Ghidorah is actually three people taped together, each giving a different performance, which is really, really cool. I didn't think it would be that. I thought it'd be purely digital characters, but it's not. So that's really cool. Like, I haven't seen a Warner Brothers disc go this in-depth in quite some time. I'm actually super happy with it. So, Godzilla King of the Monsters, if you like the kaiju movies, where you see the big guys slugging it out, and if you like the Godzilla license, then Godzilla King of the Monsters is absolutely a hardcore recommendation from us here at This Week in Geek.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And we're we're back here, right here on Twig the Flagship of Stupidity, and I'm here to talk about the weird, the wacky, the just plain fucked up things that happened on the Big Blue Marble this week. And we're going to start things off with Pennywise the Dancing Clown. That's right, the bad guy from It. Evidently, if you were a certain woman in New Jersey last week, you got the shit scared out of you as a plush Pennywise doll covered in odd scribblings floated into a woman's yard and scared the crap out of her. So Renee Jensen, a resident of New Jersey's Harrington Parks borough, spoke to NJ.com and USA Today about the incident, saying that she and her boyfriend were soaking in some rays outside when they saw the airborne nightmare drift into their yard. Jensen, who lives off a country road in a relatively secluded area, is baffled as to how the doll made its way to their stead, especially considering that they only have one neighbor who wasn't home at the time of the incident. She says, "If you saw how many trees we have and where this thing came from, it made no sense at all. It didn't even hit any of our trees until it was just about to land at our gate." She described the scribblings as culty and satanic, covering its head. Through a subsequent Google search, yielded no results. She called the cops, who, by telling her, they were also kind of creeped out, so their only course of action was to tell her to get rid of the thing, which she took as an opportunity to set the thing on fire. So they're not sure whether this thing was a viral marketing for It or not. She goes on to say, "I didn't want this thing on my property. I know people think it's crazy, but it's creepy." She's also a Reiki healer who admits she's a touch of woo, so she added some sage, walked the entire property, then curled up at night with a knife at her side. And so
I'm surprised weird. Surprised she didn't have her crystals to heal things.
I don't know. I don't think a crystal's going to do much against friggin' It.
I don't think Reiki's going to do much against the satanic It either. Oh, I'm cleansing the air.
But then again, hey, some people believe that. Hey, so
if it helps you calm down, great.
Party on. That's exactly what I say. So I thought that was weird, and that would be one of the more interesting viral marketing I've seen. I remember when they did marketing for It in Toronto, that people dressed up in the Georgie raincoat while just carrying around red balloons in downtown Toronto,
standing in the rain.
A couple of my friends were extras in It too, which was pretty cool. They revealed that this past spring, so I'm looking forward to hopefully spotting them on screen. One of my friends also won a movie poster signed by the entire cast and a bunch of other things. She does this incredible cosplay of Pennywise. She's like a makeup artist, and it's fucking disturbing. Although she's a hot clown, so figure that one out. But anyway,
there's an entire avenue of porn for that. You know it.
Yes, there is. It's disturbing. Google clown butter sometime.
And you tell me that I'm the messed up one.
Okay, there's a reason for that, because a friend of mine's ex-husband is terrified of clowns. So we were thinking about, well, what would be a fucked up way to make his day a little bit more interesting? And we stumbled upon clown butter, and that is a Google pathway I'm never going down.
All right, I'm
going
to type that in right now. Clown butter. I can send you some really messed up stuff. Not clown butterfly.
So moving on to my next
wrong
story.
With that. What's wrong with clown butter?
This one's a little bit more up your alley, since you know more about professional wrestling than me. But earlier this year, this past April, in fact, David Harbour premiered as Hellboy, much to a box office bomb. It didn't do too well.
Unfortunate, but because it's just, you know, not a bad idea. It just wasn't performed. Not to his fault. I think it was more production issues.
Yeah, so it is what it is. But Hellboy is making his pro wrestling debut in Japan. So in the 2019 Summer Explosion Final Battle event, Hellboy will be teaming up with Jake Lee, Koji Iwatamoto, and he will take on Takeo Omuro, Black Menso Ray, and Hakuro Omori in a six-man tag match.
Okay, now this is weird. Like, to give you a bit of background, All Japan is the older of the two big Japanese wrestling companies, the other one being New Japan that most people are used to. All Japan dates, I think, back to the late 60s, early 70s, and then New Japan's late 70s, something like that. They're a splinter group, and New Japan is like the WWE, in that they're a little more realistic, but they're that sort of production style. They put on those Tokyo Dome shows that do 50,000 people sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And All Japan is like the equivalent, I could say, is like traditional WCW pre-90s, like traditional wrestling, more realistic. A lot of famous WWF, WWE wrestlers started their careers going to Japan and for All Japan or for New Japan. So New Japan has been like a shell of what it was in like the 70s and 80s and early 90s. But they never really did these weird characters like this. So it's like, this is like full on early 90s RoboCop saves Sting sort of shit.
But say, so, yeah, I mean, evidently this is a push by Lionsgate, which is trying to get the film a big final media push because the movie premieres over there on September 27th, rather. It's not revealed who's playing Hellboy, though we're pretty sure it's not David Harbour.
Well, no, because Japan has had different things like this before. Leatherface was a wrestler for years. Like it's supposed to be Leatherface. Same with Jason Voorhees. And they're like not ripoffs. Like they're actually supposed to be them from the movies. So it's just not happened at All Japan before. So this is weird.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of strange. And Hellboy Wrestling, I hope he has the right hand of doom as his finisher, which he would have to. So
I
want to
see him face off against like old man Terry Funk, because he was, what was he, Chainsaw Charlie, which is basically again like he was like a Leatherface ripoff in the 90s. So like have him face it, or have him face Glacier, the guy that was the Sub-Zero knockoff.
Yeah. So that's pretty, like I said, that's pretty out there. I'm sure we'll talk about it again when it comes up on YouTube, because guaranteed there'll be footage of this on YouTube.
I will be finding it and I will be getting it.
So moving on to my next bit of weird news. This one's a little bit, not so much weird, but it was an odd quote that came out of a panel at Monster Mania, which happened a little while ago with Robert Englund, and who he'd like to see portray him potentially as Freddy Krueger. He said during Monster Mania, he said, "The rumor that I like is Kevin Bacon. Kevin loves horror. He's a real actor. He's a character actor. Kevin was great in Tremors. Kevin was great in Stir of Echoes. And I've heard this rumor. We need someone like that to take it on and redo it, exploiting all the new technology." He goes on to say, "We need a Freddy that can do the next 8 movies or 7. I don't want to remake Part 1 again. I'm not Freddy anymore. You guys, I could do one more. Probably, if you shot me up with vitamin C. But here's the thing. I can't do 8 more, you guys. So we need a new actor you guys believe in, trust, and love that can go the distance."
Well, why don't they do something with... have it finished... Like, have them do the versus Ash or whatever they planned on doing originally. Have him do it. Have him die. And then have his, like, evil spirit reincarnated into somebody.
That's an interesting idea. I mean, myself, I want one more traditional nightmare, because if we did the team up thing, I think it would cheapen the character, because we got Freddy versus Jason and that was fine. That came out 15 fucking years ago, if you can believe that.
I would still think like people would flock
16
to
years
it
ago,
for,
sorry.
People would flock to it for Bruce Campbell.
Oh yeah. But at the same time, I kind of want the character to be taken. I want him to be scary again last time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Have him be scary in it, but have him die. And then, because he's like immortal demon souls or whatever, then you have him reincarnate in, like, Bacon's too old already to, like, he's only like 10 years younger than Robert Englund.
But right? Then again, Kevin could play a good bad guy, because I think about his performance in X-Men First Class. He was great as Sebastian Shaw.
You know who I would think would be fantastic and you would not see it coming?
Who?
Zac Efron.
Mm.
You've seen how he can play dark and devious. Like, have it be reincarnated in him, and have over the film have him slowly turn, sort of like Freddy 2.
I'm trying to think if I could see... I can't see Zach. He's too charismatic. He's too likable. But that's not to say he
Shia
could play
LaBeouf.
Another. Shia, I'm trying to think. I want someone, an older actor. I want Patrick Wilson.
Be old, though, because then they can't do the 8 films. You know what I mean? You have to have them at an age in their 30s or early 40s.
I want someone who has menace. I like Patrick Wilson from the Conjuring movies. I last saw him in Aquaman. He was Ocean Master. I think he could pull it off. I mean, he has a charisma about him, but when he gets intense in your face, I think he could pull that off.
Who's the guy that played John Connor in Terminator Genesis?
Jason Clark. That's not a bad choice either.
He's, again, right around the right age, early 40s, I think, maybe.
Yeah, early 40s, no older than 50. But yeah, if you got him as a new Freddy, and don't redo part one again. That's the problem.
No, he has the face that could, like, you could put the makeup on. You could see it.
Yeah. Like, if I were to remake any of the Nightmare sequels, this is going to be blasphemous.
Dream Warriors.
Yeah, I would do Dream Warriors because you have the most potential to exploit new technologies, both practical and digital.
Honest, they would only do digital.
And I don't know. I think whoever you got to direct it would insist on practical. Because, hell, go back and watch Dream Warriors right now and you realize that was 1980-something.
84, like, I think, 85.
84, 85, maybe 86 at the latest.
Oh, no, wait, no. It was 84 was the first one, right? So,
yeah.
86 or 87.
Yeah, so the practicality of those effects, what could be accomplished now?
Well, I mean, would you get Lawrence Fishburne back?
No. I just want them to not do the Nancy story again. I mean, because the one that came out in 2010, it had its moments, but it sucked. So,
yeah, like, I mean, Kevin, special effects wise, if they got the team that did the new Chucky movie, it could be like say what you will about the film itself. The practical effects were good.
Yeah, absolutely. I will definitely agree to that. So, Kevin Bacon, could you be Freddy? I don't know.
I think he's maybe too old. He could do one film.
I'd have to see him in the makeup.
Well, here's the thing. Would he be willing to do it?
I think Kevin Bacon would do it. Kevin likes horror. So,
but wouldn't they want to, like, make a new star or something or other like that? I don't know. I still think they could do one more with him, like he said. They could do one more film. He doesn't have to be in all of it. That's why the ensemble cast thing would work, because he said it would be difficult to do an entire film with just him. But he could do 25 minutes of on-screen time.
Yeah, like it would live and die by its script. I want serious. I want more in tone with Nightmare 1 and 3.
Yeah. Or if you do go silly, if doing the Ash one would be great, because Bruce Campbell could basically, he could handle most of the on-screen time because he would be in the least amount of makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you did the, you know, Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, whoever they have playing Jason, it's not too bad. It might be hot in that big suit, but for the most part, you could focus it on Ash and then have him be basically encountering these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then find a way at the end, you tease the reincarnation or something.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully it's not just rumor, but we'll wait and see. So my last story this week, I got to thank Internet Today for bringing me this story.
Oh, is this the pig cum story?
Yep. A pair of farmers in Australia have been sentenced to prison for their involvement in an elaborate semen racket. Henning Lau and Torben Sorensen have pled guilty to breaking biosecurity and quarantine laws for smuggling Danish pig semen into the country, according to Australia's ABC News. The traffickers concealed the semen in shampoo bottles and imported it into the country through passenger luggage. So these people were fined $500,000. And according to authorities, they got tipped off to these people in February 2017, when Australian Agriculture Department investigators first found emails that mentioned deliveries of special semen, then seized and tested hog hair samples, which revealed the pigs were Danish. ABC reports that Sorensen's lawyer said his activity was stupid and called Sorensen the frontman of a plot overseen by Danish kingpins who are large investors in Sorensen's parent company, Pork Austria Apps, which is based in Denmark. Sorensen reportedly got involved in the scheme in 2012, but the court was told the operation began in 2009. So this goes on, but basically, they were hoping to make the company's boars more fertile over time, and it's claimed that GD Pork imported the semen illegally in an attempt to get an unfair advantage over its competitors through new genetics. This case shows a disturbing disregard for the laws that protect the livelihoods of Australia's 2,700 pork producers. That's an awfully long way to go to get some pig cum.
Pig spunk. Now... Can you imagine? You go to jail. It's like, what are you in here for? Murder. What are you in here for? I stole a bunch of shit. What are you in here for? Drugs. What are you in for? Pig cum.
Well, here's the question I have, and I'm way overthinking this. Okay, so they smuggled this pig semen in shampoo bottles, right? I prefer to say
pig spunk.
Pig spunk. So they smuggled it in shampoo bottles. How is that going to be viable?
Who knows how strong that jizz is? Like,
well, I'm just saying
it's probably not like human jizz. Like, it might have a, if you chill it. Well, think about it. Like, if they smuggled it in those bottles, but then kept it at a certain temperature, isn't that how sperm banks work?
Yeah, because I'm thinking if they have to fly to Denmark back to Australia, that's got to be over a 10-hour flight.
So they're like, what's chilling in here? It'd be like, oh, nothing. Hair shampoo. Somebody just dumps it on themselves and be like, ew.
Well, I'm thinking even the dogs that sniff, like, passenger luggage might pick that up.
They'd be like, woof, what's that smell? It's like, well, that's not the drugs, woof. That's the pig cum, woof.
But still, I thought that was worth reporting on because it was so strange and out there. And you don't think about it, but having, like, disrupting the biodiversity where you live, that's a big deal, and I guess getting an unfair advantage. Agriculture's weird, because I live in Guelph next to a fairly prominent university which specializes in farming and agriculture and whatnot, and I come from a farming community as well. So I could see how they were using this to make their hogs more fertile over time to gain advantage over people, which would give them a business advantage. So I can see how this isn't a good thing.
It's obviously similar to when people stud out their horses and stuff.
Yeah.
You can get exactly. $200,000 per jerk, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, if you take the prize stallion and you basically sell his jizz, you could get like $250,000.
Mm-hmm. Plus, even there's no telling what these guys could have brought over too, because what if these pigs that they brought or they got over in Denmark or wherever, what if they were curing a disease or a mutation?
What do they have, specially marked bottles, ones where the pigs only ate pineapple so it tastes better?
Oh dear. But I don't know. It raises, like I said, some interesting questions, to say the very least. But so yeah, this guy's going to go to jail. He's going to be fined an awful lot. So
yeah,
he's not going to have a good time.
That's not a good conversation. What are you in for? Pig cum.
Yeah, pig spunk. So on that note, we're going to throw things over to Alex and Vinegar Syndrome double feature. So we'll be back right after this, and then we're going to close out the show.
Got a couple more releases here from Vinegar Syndrome, Uninvited and Night Owl. Now, Uninvited is a movie from 1987 that I was positive I'd seen it before, but I couldn't remember placing it where. I think it ran Of all things, I didn't have like a horror channel directly or anything, or it didn't air in space. I think it aired on Showtime or Showcase, sorry, in Canada, or local TV edited back in the 90s, you know, on a weekend or something, edited down from its R rating. So I was sort of in this weird surreal space where I recognized some parts but didn't recognize other parts. But here's the basic premise of the movie. At a secluded biochemical lab, which runs cruel tests on animals, a seemingly innocent-looking cat has just escaped. But beneath its furry exterior, a terrifying monster has been seated. Emerging to brutally maim and kill anyone it finds threatening, discovered by a group of teenage spring breakers and brought aboard a luxury yacht bound for the Cayman Islands. Of course. The cuddly fluffball begins gnawing away at the ship's guests and crew, but to make matters worse, it soon revealed that the cruise's host, a renowned millionaire, is in fact on the run from the law and won't return the boat to shore. Killer mutant cat be damned. It's ridiculous. So, I said, I thought I saw it before. So, I in watching it, I had this weird deja vu feeling. So, I really enjoyed it. It's ridiculous. Lo-fi, practical effects, I love. So, the film, it's in mono, but that's pretty standard, like, again, for the fair for the 80s. It has a newly minted 4K master. So, this is a normal Blu-ray, but it's got a 4K master. So, it's noticeably crisper and clearer, and the colors are toned a lot better than what you've seen previously. If you'd seen, like, obviously VHS or DVD releases in the past, there's a commentary track with the director. There's an alternate international edit, which is a couple minutes longer. So that one I watched, that's the version I think I saw here. So, you know, there's a US version, and then there's an international Canadian, you know, it's just slightly different cuts, slightly different scenes, a little extra. An interview with the cinematographer talking about how they had to film parts with the cat and parts with the, you know, puppets and all that sort of junk. There's original trailer, reversible cover art, and the cover art that was commissioned for it is pretty darn good. But I actually like the original because it's all hand painted and it's a big yacht with this cat going on the cover, which is amazing. And you also get a DVD in this, so you get the standard def and you get a Blu-ray, which is pretty sweet. Now the other release here is Night Owl, and Night Owl is in black and white. It's full screen because it was filmed that way in direct to video, and it's interesting. It's about a post-punk vampire who spends his nights cruising seedy music dives and for drugged out women to seduce and kill. So interesting, sort of modern late 80s, early 90s. It's from 1993. It focuses on sort of a modern day vampire scene, which is interesting. And it has very young John Leguizamo in it. There's also some people that are, not people that I recognize by name, but they're people that when you watch them, you're like, oh, you sort of became famous as a character actor later or character actress. So it's in stereo. But comes out dual mono. So it's like, it's a stereo track, but it's two mono tracks, which I found kind of weird. Take with that what you will. Now it has a brand new 1080p master, which is great. There's audio commentary with the director. There's interview, with one of the actors. There's an interview with a second actor. And then a few other cast members on another track. So there's like three or four, different interviews on this. There's an archival interview with one of the actors as well. There is the original cast auditions, which is interesting to watch. Raw interview footage made for this film as well. And there's the original trailer for video for VHS. Versatile cover art, same standard stuff that way. The cover art on the front of it is just like a photograph with the title across it. And the original was the same thing, but zoomed out. So there wasn't like anything fancy with this, so I just left the reversible cover on the standard new version. Both of them are pretty good. If you're gonna pick one, Uninvited's probably the better classic film that way. If you're into like the indie film scene, or you just like John Leguizamo, it's gonna be worth picking up Night Owl.
And that's the kind of show it's been, believe me, from Spider-Man to the MCU, the Matrix, to finally Pigsbunk.
Yes.
That's the kind of show we've had for you this week. As always, we do welcome your involvement in the show. So feedback at thisweekingeek.net or contact us on Twitter at birdmandodd, at thisweekingeek. And Alex, your Twitter handle is?
At deathfacetwig. You can find me on Facebook. Same feedback as you. Feedback at thisweekingeek or Alex at thisweekingeek.net.
Exactly. So
we've got a bunch of stuff on the go. So
yeah, we got a lot of stuff going on this week. We got Alex's Turtle Treasure coming out later on this week. We also have a back to school guide, which we'll be releasing just before you kids go back to college or high school, depending on where you're currently going. I'm also back on Nerds the Third Power this week. We're going to be talking about the Game Boy's 30th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken, this week. So that should be a lot of fun, talking about Nintendo handhelds.
We still got some stuff on the work. We just got to figure out some scheduling to get our Twig After Dark recorded, as well as, didn't we want to do a prototype as well?
Yeah, we did want to do a prototype. What did we want to talk about, though? I forget, because we did want to talk about fighting games.
Yeah,
but that's kind of come and gone.
We're going to talk about the announcements from Gamescom, where we see the fall quarter going.
Yeah, so we'll kind of do a holiday preview, so to speak.
An early, yeah, because we'll still do another one as we get closer to the actual holiday season, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's just schedules have to line up this week because I'm at the doctor's a lot this week.
Yeah, so that might be, it's probably going to be a next week thing.
Probably, yeah. So stay tuned for that. As always, there's always something going on the site. I know we had some classic interviews go up this past week.
There'll be more coming up, too, in the next couple weeks. And then we're going to keep doing that. There's still, I think, a couple more with the adult industry. And then we go into, drawing a blank, the voice of Otacon.
Christopher Randolph.
I think it's it, yes.
Yeah, so he was a really fun interview when I talked with him. So he was a good guy. So I do thank him for doing that interview with me. Man, must have been about, maybe 10 years ago now.
Most of these are from 2007 to 2009.
So, yeah, so a lot of these are older episodes. So make sure if you didn't catch on the first time around when they are fresh, they're
and
just
I'm willing
as
to
good
bet
reheated.
Most people haven't. And a lot of these aren't your standard interviews where it's like, here, just talk about what new things coming out now that's no longer relevant. You get a lot of it's like, tell
personal
me about yourself.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because that's always been my interview style. Talk about what I got to talk about. But then, hey, tell me about you. What makes you interesting?
Yeah. So they're unique and different from what you'd usually hear, especially from the adult industry.
Exactly. I'm always happy to talk to adult actresses and actors because they don't get a chance to always be people, and there's people behind the performance, and that's always been my big belief when talking with people in that industry. So anyway, guys, keep it locked here to thisweekingeek.net. We got a lot of stuff coming up. So until next time, we have been...
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodson. Live free or die hard. And as always, be cool, be kind, be careful. We'll catch you next time right here on thisweekingeek.net.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was 3, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.